A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's UnitedHealthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I'm Ellie Gibson.
I'm Helen Thorne.
And we're joined today by a very special guest. Hello to Woman's Hours, Jane Garvey.
Hello, great to be here. Thank you for asking.
Jane Garvey's here. We're very excited.
So exciting.
And even I'm excited.
Yay! Yes. And we're even recording on location, aren't we, Helen?
We are in Broadcasting House.
The Broadcasting House.
Not just a Broadcasting House.
Yeah,
Your house could be a Broadcasting House, Ellie.
It could be, but it contains one crap microphone, so I'm not sure that
Whereas
qualifies.
We've got thousands of crap microphones here.
Oh, so we're very glad to be here. And thank you also, Jane. I should say that Jane is presently holding my baby, literally.
Yes.
You are holding the baby.
Yes. Yeah. Well, not for the first time. No, he is lovely.
Aww.
And I think you must have, maybe, are you good at motherhood or something? Because he's gorgeous and he's really, really well behaved.
Aww.
And can I say, comment on the rigidity of his head. He's holding it up, something super. How old is he?
He's 8 months.
Yeah, but he was premature.
But he was
wasn't
2 months early. So yeah. So but well, basically, I just drug him very heavily with milk.
It's working.
I fed him for about 3 hours.
In the early part of that sentence, I was a bit worried. I was thinking, what have I let myself in for?
But it's a clean show.
There's scummy and then there's scummy.
Yeah. Right.
Then there's illegal.
Ooh, the relief.
So you are a presenter on BBC Radio 4's Woman Hour. You have two daughters. You love reading, baths, football, and talking. Well, that's a bonus.
The talking is a bonus.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes, good.
I say on my Twitter bio that I talk for a living. And I do.
Yeah.
And it's balmy, isn't it, really?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
And not that lucrative relative to some other people who do it for a living. But anyway, that's enough of my private grievances.
That's right.
Carry on.
And it says you're learning to cook. Is that still a fact?
Well, not really. I mean, I do, like a lot, I'm a single parent. I've got, my daughters are 15 and a half and nearly 13. And we just eat a lot of mince. and I spent yesterday afternoon making chilli, which wasn't particularly appreciated. Actually, quite a lot of faff.
Yeah.
But the kids have, I mean, after many years, they've cottoned on to the fact that we do eat a lot of mince and it just comes in various forms, sort of disguised as either chilli, cottage pie, spaghetti bolognese. It is essentially,
it's
the same dish.
It is.
So learning to cook. I've mastered mince.
Mm. That's good. My dad's a big mince cooker. Mince is the only thing he can cook, to the point where I ended up buying him a book of mince recipes.
Oh, I've got that book.
Have you?
Yes.
His one is called, I'm not making it. It's by René Lasagna, I think. Have you got it?
Yeah. But I feel as though learning to cook is possibly a lie. I think I was asked to make something up for a Radio 4 bio, wasn't I? Which you just nicked.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, I'll say that because it makes me sound like some sort of little homemaker type.
It's a nice, well-rounded profile.
It's a little bit self-deprecating as well, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right.
I don't like to say I make great mince because people would then take against me. We can't have that.
No.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on the podcast, Jane. I have to say, I'm still sort of getting over it. It was quite weird to meet you just now for the first time in Reception Broadcasting House. And yeah, it was like meeting a sort of animated radio, because I've listened to your voice for literally years. And then there it is coming out of a person.
Yeah,
and I'm
spooky.
Just like, what's, she's a real person.
No, she doesn't look like a radio.
I thought you were like one of the archers and you just sort of were a figment.
Well, I feel like that because I've met some of the archers.
I couldn't handle that.
And that really is, that's spooky. That's proper, because they're proper legends, the people of the archers. I'm a here today, gone tomorrow type of person, but some of the archers have been there for 40, 50 years on that programme. I mean, that's incredible. They are really radio royalty, those people.
Some of them were actually born in the studio, I heard.
Yes,
and they've just never been allowed to
leave. There's a rumour that they don't really have a farm and that they stand around in a studio in Birmingham reading off bits of paper, but I'm not having that said.
Or someone knocks two coconut shells together for the horses.
Stop it. Rubbish.
Did the archers look what you thought they were going to look like?
I'm not even sure whether legally I'm allowed to answer that. I think, actually, in a funny way, they do. I've got to be honest, the real female legends in the Archers are Peggy and Jill. And I have, they're both wonderful, wonderful women, actually. Quite show busy. Mm. But I think I'm right in saying that they are both in their 90s.
Wow.
Still working, still at the very heart of all those storylines in the Archers. Much loved. I mean, I wish, honestly, I hope I get to their stage of life, if I'm really lucky, and to be still working in a job you love. How great is that in your 90s? Oh, yeah. Fantastic. See, even Joe agrees.
We'll still be talking about our fannies. Yeah. There'll be so much to talk
actually,
about at
I'm not
90.
Sure that you will.
No. We'll be crying.
Yes.
Mine will have fallen off.
Or fallen out.
That's right.
Oh, that's probably just me. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, lots of exciting stuff to talk about. But to kick us off, Jane, please tell us about your family.
My family. OK. Well, I mean, I have to say, holding Joe is a really lovely thing for me because I love babies. I love babies' heads. I think anyone who doesn't love a baby's head. I mean, I'm just stroking Joe's head. He's gorgeous. having teenagers is a different kettle of fish. And I'm at a stage in life where I guess a lot of women of mine, I'm 51, so I've got parents still alive, luckily, and in reasonably good health, but living a long way from me. So I've got a sister, and she and I spend a lot. She's got two sons, I've got two daughters. And it's an interesting kind of family dynamic. I don't think mine is unusual. You know, I'm a long way from my parents. I try to help them out as much as I can, but obviously I'm working. I've got my responsibilities. My sister's the same. I think it's no wonder that women in their 40s and 50s go a bit doolally tap, because I think a lot of us have got a lot on our plates. And actually, seriously, that's one of the really good things about doing Woman's Hour, because I'm at the right age to present a programme, like that, which talks about and actually confronts sometimes some of the challenges that women are up against.
You're holding one of them right now.
Exactly. I'm holding one of my children. And it's made me realise how much I want to be a grandparent, though not now.
No.
Thank you very much. But, you know, my daughter's 16 in December, and people keep saying, oh, I think you're through the worst of it. And I don't know whether I am. I mean, teenagers are so contemptuous. And just so filled with disdain. Mm. And I think it's a difficult time to be a parent, actually. You've got to, and it's the same for dads, I should say. You've really got to gather your strength and think, you know, okay, I'm gonna get through this, and she'll come round again. And she, you know, my daughter's lovely, really, but it's hard work. Yeah. Different sort of hard work to this.
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask you, because you've been a mother now for 15 or 15 and a half years. Let's add that extra half.
Oh, yeah.
And you've interviewed, like, hundreds of mothers in your career. Mm. What would be your best advice for all the scummy mummies out there?
Something, actually, that I think your podcast does really well, which is to acknowledge just how difficult it can be, actually how lonely it can be. Mm. How isolating being a young mum or a novice mum, I don't mean young as in age, it's just really tough. And I was a radio presenter, and I was 35 when I had my first daughter. And I'd always had a really lovely time at work. People had been really nice to me. I was a presenter, so there was an element of people dancing around me, if you like, and doing what I wanted in rather a diva-ish way. Imagine my horror to enter a maternity hospital where I was just some other bloody pregnant woman. And then all of a sudden people were calling me mummy after my daughter was born. I don't know if that happened to you, but, you know, they suddenly start saying, now, what does mummy want? And I'm thinking, well, I don't know where my mother is. I'm sure she'll be in a minute. And then they're talking about me.
Yeah.
And I just felt a bit of a piece of meat. And I think it's a really, really hard time for any woman, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And in theory, I had everything going for me. Mm. I was mature. I wasn't short of money. I had a nice warm house, but I still found those first months, probably years, really, really tough.
Yeah.
And I don't think it does women any favours to sentimentalise about that time in your life. Mm. I think women on the whole would be a lot happier if we could all just be honest about it and actually say, you know what, whoever you are, whatever your circumstances, this can be a really difficult time in your life.
Yeah.
And if you have relatively low expectations, you're probably going to be better off.
Yeah, I remember reading, I think it was Jo Brand's autobiography, and she said, nobody tells you how hard it is, otherwise no one would reproduce again.
No,
but
that's true.
I think there's a bit of that honesty thing where you want to, when someone gets pregnant and everyone goes, congratulations,
yeah.
450 likes on Facebook, this is wonderful. But you don't want to be like the grey cloud, but you do want to say, and one of the best advice I got was a friend said, I love it, but some days I hate it.
Yeah.
There are just some days I hate it. And I thought, and that was so comforting. But it's not all the Pampers ads and yeah.
No,
I mean, you can sniff your baby's head, you know, for a couple of hours, but time.
Not for 15 hours a day.
No, you can't.
I haven't sniffed Joe's head yet.
Oh, no, go on, give it a.
Well, do you know what I don't miss is the smell of nappies in soft play centres.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, until I have grandchildren, I have escaped the soft play centre. There was one in particular. I'm not going to name it, but the
was it Bardo's? Was it Bardo's?
No, I'm not going to name it. But the Sunday afternoons I spent in that. I never ever want to go there again. Unless I'm with my beautiful, gifted grandchildren, who are all going to be called Jane. Regardless of
or just
gender.
Garvey.
Yeah. Or just Garvey. Yeah, that's
Garvey, Garvey.
That would be a great idea.
Marcus, maybe not. But I think, right, I agree with what you're saying about there is too much guff out there about how motherhood is a wonderful natural joy. But also, I think sometimes we're in danger of going too far the other way. Because when I was pregnant with my first child, I did have loads of people going, oh, it's going to be amazing. But I also had quite a lot of quite annoying people going, oh, your life is over. You'll never leave the house. You'll get postnatal depression. You won't put clothes on for 3 weeks. You know, you'll forget what a lipstick is and you'll just hate your life. Like, I honestly have men and women saying that to me.
Yeah.
So I actually was quite a nice surprise when Charlie was born. I did have help as well, I should say. My mum lives near me, so I did have someone to hold the baby and cook my tea, and you know, that was a huge difference.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm very lucky, and I know that I'm maybe the exception to the rule, but I also kind of would like to sit some of those people down now and go, don't scare women to the point where they think their life is completely over. I was still going to the pub a week later. All right, I was taking a car seat and it was 3 p.m.
Did you have the nipple things in?
The what, sorry?
The nipple things in your bra.
The shields. I've never had that. I've never had the spurting. I've been very.
I was like Niagara Falls. I remember going into Zara in like a mauve.
She went into Zara though.
Yeah.
Get that. Go on.
And I had a letdown in Zara.
I had a letdown in Zara.
Size 12 my ass. Or not, ironically.
Jesus Christ. I know. So yeah, I was just a leak machine. I remember doing some kind of spurty thing in Starbucks and just like spraying the person in the next couch.
Yes. Can I say, I've done that. I've tried to breastfeed in a doctor's waiting room and the milk just shot into the face of a bloke on the other side. And I will always remember the expression on his face as it was rather sweet, actually. He wasn't being unkind, but he obviously needed to get rid of it from his face. But it's a bit like when somebody spits at you accidentally in a conversation and you think, I'm going to have to get rid of this with my finger in a minute, or a tissue, but I don't want to make them feel embarrassed.
Yeah.
And that's how he felt about my... Anyway, that's poor bloke. I do hope he's all right.
Well,
so I would also say, honestly, and you're right to emphasise the good things, I get more satisfaction and joy is not too strong a word out of my children's, I was going to say achievements, but it's not even achievement, it's just their general, the funny things they say, the friends they've made, the stuff we do still do together. That's much better than anything else I will ever do. And you know, when they're very little and they start school, and then another mum will say, oh, we'd like so and so to come around to our house to play, and I still get a bit of a thrill out of my children being invited to things, because it's like you think, oh, someone else likes them, oh, that's good. And I'm still a bit surprised because they're my children, obviously. I can't believe it. But I think you're really right to emphasise the good stuff. It's an amazing thing to be a parent, and actually, obviously, I'm coming at this from a woman's point of view. Motherhood is not the same as fatherhood. Mm. It's a very, very different thing. It's not better, it's not worse, it's just very, very different. And I do think, I'm so glad that I've been able to be a mum. I really mean that. And I feel very, very fortunate, because I went into it quite late and it needn't necessarily have happened. And it did. And I'm incredibly, incredibly lucky. I'm going to burst into tears.
I know.
I'm actually being quite sensitive.
You are. You're being very lovely. Very sincere.
Don't fall for it.
I do remember listening to Women's Hour, I think it was a couple of years ago, and there was a psychologist on.
Oh, God. And there often is, yes.
And she was talking about motherhood, and I remember her saying, often a lot of things can be dealt with a glass of wine with a friend. Mm. And I know it sounds really silly, but that was one of these moments when I was listening to your show going, oh, thank God, you know. Mm. So, yeah, and that was really good.
I had, and I'm sure a lot of women, I hope a lot of women can relate to this, a friend who was around at the time, who was in the same situation as me, who lived next, literally next door to me in West London. And she and I, Liz, her name is, she might even be listening, we would just spend a bit of time together every single day while I was on maternity leave and she was around at home. It made such a big difference. Walking in the park, walking to the park, even just watching telly together. Just not to be on your own.
Yeah.
And if I were a man, I'd have had seven kids because I think it's a wonderful thing to be a father and to be able to walk away, bye, I'm off. Slam goes the front door and you just think, oh my God, what am I going to do now for 10 hours, 11 hours, whatever it is.
Yeah, watch the clock.
Yeah, watch the clock and then you get, I mean, my first daughter was born before CBeebies.
What?
Exactly.
Before iPads?
There was no, exactly. There were no iPads and there was no CBeebies. Ah. But it does seem like a long, long time ago. And it was the last century. Well, she was only 2 weeks old when the century changed. I always remember as a child, this is a not particularly interesting story, I would lie awake at night as a young teenager thinking, what will I be doing on New Year's Eve 1999 if I live that long? And I know exactly what I was doing on New Year's Eve 1999. I was breastfeeding.
Yes.
And I did not stop. I went right through into the 21st century on a kind of desperate breastfeeding marathon to soothe a two-week-old baby. Oh,
tits out.
Yeah, I mean, it was, yes, my tits were out for the new century, but it wasn't quite the way I might have imagined.
Shall we? I think we've cracked the nut of motherhood, I reckon.
Do you? Okay. Yeah, I wish I had.
Odd episodes, but we've done it.
Yeah, thank you. Should we move on to career chat?
Oh, let's do it.
Career chat. Mm. Now, Jane, how did this all begin?
How did you get this job?
What's behind? We're going behind the microphone today.
Yes. Behind the microphone. Well, I got this job. I have to say, sometimes I live in West London, and there's a lot of women who don't work in West London. Joe's just coughing up a little bit.
What?
And good luck to him. They're not. Not everybody in West London is a woman and doesn't work, but there are women I meet who will say to me, oh, you're so lucky to have a job like yours. How do you get a job like yours? Because I'm part-time. One of brilliant aspects of working on Woman's Hour is that I do usually 3 or 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually gone by mid-afternoon.
Perfect.
At the latest, in fact. The answer to the question, how did you get the job, is that it took me, when I went into radio at 23, worked in local radio for nearly 8 years, then worked at Five Live for 13 years, then came to Radio 4. So no one can tell me.
You just knock on the door going, hi, I'm Jane, great. I love women.
I didn't arrive at Broadcasting House as a 23-year-old and say, right, put me on Radio 4. I'm afraid in my case it didn't work that way. I think some people do have an amazing quick start, but I didn't. So I've been stealthy, I would say.
You were the first voice of Five Live.
Yes, I was.
That's amazing.
Well, I'm a living bit of radio history.
You are. Great. That's exciting.
Doesn't really mean you get served any quicker in Tesco Express, I have to be honest. But
you don't have some gold card that just like gets you in the front queue of Greggs or anything like that.
No. Have you got a Black Nando's card?
No, although I am a frequent user of their service.
You should get one. You're a celebrity. You should get a black card.
I am not a celebrity. I went to Nando's on Mother's Day. That was what my kids thought would be a nice treat. And I still paid. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Honestly,
Nando's.
We've got to make some calls, Ellie. This is an injustice.
And they were giving out flowers.
This woman needs free chicken.
Absolutely.
I got one really knackered-looking tulip on my way out of Nando's on Mother's Day. Anyway, happy days.
But my husband also thinks it's appropriate for a special occasion. It was our wedding anniversary the other week.
Oh, not Nando's, surely.
Well, we were talking about where to go, and I said, why don't we just, you know, we live quite near Catford, and I said, why don't we just go to the Noodle House in Catford? I like noodles. He went, no, I'm not going to Catford Noodle House for our anniversary. And I said, all right. And he said, what about Nando's? And I went, are you serious?
Is that an improvement on the Noodle House?
And he went, refillable drinks.
Oh, he's got a point.
Who doesn't like a bottomless, you know, cup of Coke?
Me on my anniversary.
fair point, yeah. Ellie. Mm. I was going to ask, is this the dream role for you? I mean, it sounds like it. You get to work part-time. you get to hang out here, you meet fabulous people. How could you improve?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I could.
Yeah.
There are brilliant practical aspects to it. So I'm at home when my kids get back from school.
Oh.
Are they interested in seeing me? Not really. Are they interested in talking to me? Not so much these days. Are they sort of glad that it's me who's there? I think probably they are, but they wouldn't put it into words. And no. I've been really fortunate that that's been... I've worked at Women's Hour for 7.5 years. I'm sure to my colleagues it feels a lot longer. It might be nearly 8 years, in fact. It is. And that means that I've seen my younger daughter right through her school career, picking her up from school, being able to pick her up from school every single day. Well, or her dad, I should say, not just me always. And that has been a real... I think... They'll never express it because children don't express it. But I think that's been nice for them. Mm. And it means that now, actually, we all go out of the house at the same time. They're both at secondary school, so we all leave the house at more or less the same time. That's brilliant as well.
Yeah.
Plus, it's a great, great job.
Mm.
You know, I have interviewed David Cameron. I've interviewed Meryl Streep.
It's a great job.
I'm not making political comments. I've interviewed Yvette Cooper, I've interviewed Liz Kendall, I've interviewed Julianne Moore. I've interviewed as well amazing writers. I love reading and I love books. And this morning I interviewed three judges. You know, these are spectacular opportunities and I'm really grateful for them.
Has there ever been anyone you've been sort of daunted about interviewing? You thought, wow, this person is so, I don't know, impressive or so famous, you know?
I think there is no doubt the sweat trickles down my back interviewing the Prime Minister. And I've done it a few times live. And I've interviewed Gordon Brown and Tony Blair, actually, before I came to Women's Hour. And I don't take that lightly. Mm. I mean, I do get extremely nervous. I find it very, very tense. And
why? Because you're worried?
Well, because you could... So if you're interviewing the Prime Minister live, trust me, there is pressure on you. And what you'd expect there to be. And you can just cock up absolutely spectacularly. And it's potentially career-ending. I mean, actually, every live programme you do is potentially career-ending because you can make a clangour that you say something that you didn't mean to be offensive. But other people can interpret it that way. That happens most days, I should say. But, you know, sometimes you could just overstep the mark. And I am aware of that. And I find it, the older I get, actually, the more nervous I get. I don't get less nervous.
Really?
I think that may be an age thing. I don't know. I think you just have a sense of how much you're risking, I think, is this.
If it is, it's such a precious thing. Because obviously you've got your professional life, but there's still the Jane Garvey gut feelings.
Well, it's funny. You sort of leave the Jane... I'm talking about myself in the third person. Very dodgy. When you start to do that, you sound like a football manager under pressure. I always think so. I try not to do it. There is the real me, but the real me doesn't usually make... Well, actually, that's not quite true. I think I'm closer to my true self when I'm broadcasting than a lot of other broadcasters, which I think may or may not be part of my appeal. I think it's why some people like what I do and equally... other people don't.
Yeah.
And I think you just have to accept that. You are not going to be universally liked. Mm. You're just not. And in fact, the worst possible reaction you can get from the audience is no reaction.
Yeah.
If people just say, I don't mind or I don't know, then you're probably not going to make a successful broadcaster. Mm. If you can make an appearance on radio or telly and have people going, can't stand her, oh, I like her, then actually that's... You're probably more likely to make a success of it, but you have to be a bit so develop a reasonably thick skin, I think. But also, I should say that for the overwhelming majority of the audience, they've got no feeling about you. I mean, they probably don't really know who you are. I mean, a lot of people don't know whether it's me or Jenny, and they'll listen to the whole programme. And I was getting tweets on holiday last week congratulating me on various interviews I hadn't done. And I just, because I was on holiday.
Yeah, lovely.
And I was just thinking, I don't know whether to be pleased about this or not. And I think...
Just took one for the team.
You know, Jenny has been presenting Women's Hour for 30 years.
Wow.
I mean, nearly 30 years. I mean, she is a massive part of the sort of the programme and the heritage of it. And it's taken a long time for me to establish myself because I'm just the new one in a lot of people's minds. And, that's been quite hard work at times.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about, I guess, how Women's Hour has even changed since you started in 2007, because now it's so much more interactive.
Yes.
As you were saying, like you get tweets about how has that sort of changed things? And
it has. I mean, that was always my intention. I was... brought to the programme to change it a bit.
Yeah.
That was the idea. And I think it's essential as well that we now have a presenter younger than me, and because Emma Barnett now presents the programme too. And she's in her early 30s. I think she's only just 30. Now, that's good because...
Who's 30 these days, honestly?
God alone knows. She's like a baby.
What's she doing on Radio 4? Get on the YouTube.
Don't think I haven't complained. Get her off. She's too good and too young. So, we have made it more interactive. We have made it less... Jenny does the programme in her way. Emma does it in her way. I do it in my way. Mm. You'd have to ask our colleagues... which one of us is the most annoying of the three? Wouldn't be surprised if I was the most annoying. I hate scripts. Yeah. I think a lot of Radio 4, I'm not talking about Women's Hour particularly, but a lot of Radio 4 sounds like a lot of very nice people with lovely voices reading things out.
Mm.
And I really wanted to move away from that, to make Women's Hour much more, not lively, just a looser, slightly more engaging, slightly more modern sounding programme.
Yeah.
Because I think, as well, humour is a vital part of all women's lives. I really value my friendships with women. And I've got a lot of really good friends, some of whom I've known from school, others I've met through my kids and through work. And the big thing about our relationships is laughter.
Mm.
And taking the piss out of each other and laughing about how grim life can be actually at times, but not always grim, sometimes just very, very funny. And I wanted to bring some of that to the programme too. But Woman's Hour, without banging the drum too much, I'm so proud of it. It sometimes talks about stuff that nobody else in the mainstream media would go anywhere near.
Mm.
And it's easy to mock us because we do have a bit of an obsession, some people call it, with rape and with domestic violence and with what's going on in Afghanistan and other parts of the world where women are still treated like shit.
Mm.
And yes, okay, some people might find that boring. Well, good luck to them. They don't have to listen. But somebody has got to acknowledge this and someone has got to do these stories and interviews. And I'm really proud that we're the ones that do it. But we also have conversations, and the BBC is amazing at facilitating this, about really relatively simple stuff like, why are so many women having plastic surgery on their vaginas?
Yeah.
Why is that? Well, we know why, because of porn. Mm. Who else is going to talk about this? Only us.
Yeah.
And I'm allowed to sit there live on national radio and talk to an eminent specialist, as I did about a year ago, about what does a normal vagina look like? And, of course, there is no such thing as a labia or not. And
a Rorschach painting.
Yeah, it's just they come in, like everything else, come in all shapes and sizes.
Our faces are all different. Why can't our fannies be all different?
And they are. Really bizarre thing.
Yeah.
But, you get stories now I know a story about a man turning up at a plastic surgeon with his wife, showing the plastic surgeon a picture of something he'd seen on porn and saying, I want my wife to look like that.
Go away.
Well, it happens.
That is crazy.
And that's something that Woman's Hour wouldn't have talked about when it started in 1946.
No.
On the very first programme, and I've learnt this because sometimes I do talks about Woman's Hour, but the very first programme featured an item on what to do with whale meat.
Right.
And then later in that week...
Throw it in the bin.
Well, no, at the time it was, big stuff. There was a feature on how to hang your husband's suit.
Mm.
Wow.
Now, that is a measure of how far we've travelled. And that first programme back in 1946 was presented by a man because the BBC didn't believe that women would listen to the voice of another woman.
Oh, wow. Forward thinking.
Yeah, well,
It's
really...
a bit like in Australia. The Australian Prime Minister is also the Minister for Women.
Tony Abbott.
Delightful Tony Abbott. Yeah. I'm allowed to slag him off because I don't work for the BBC, but he's
two
a dickhead.
Two for one.
Yeah,
two for one. When is it man's hour, Jane? When is it man's hour?
Who's that Samuel man?
Tim Samuels. Men's Hour is on 5 Live. It does exist. So to every Neanderthal who complains about the existence of Woman's Hour, and some people do, I point out that Men's Hour exists. Also, I should say, Test Match Special. Has anybody heard that? That's just a load of old men wittering to each other. Now, that exists and it has every right to.
Yeah.
But as long as that exists, Woman's Hour has more than a right to exist.
Yeah.
I mean, this is men talking really seriously for hours on end about other men hurling a spherical object at each other and sometimes hitting it.
I know.
I was listening to it the other day. They had a chat about plastic surgery on vaginas, I think.
Did they? Okay, I must have missed that.
Maybe I mistuned the radio.
Kathy Lett was on the other day.
Was she?
And she made this amazing point that they brought in helmets 100 years after they brought in the dick guards. And she said, isn't that...
Yeah, that tells you all you need to know.
About men. Oh, yeah. She was...
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Or cricket. Can I ask you a behind the scenes at Woman's Hour question, Jane?
Well, it depends what it is, but go on.
Well, like, you know how you and Jenny and Emma, like, sometimes you have to do, like, the, and if you've enjoyed the programme, I'm not doing an impression of you, I'm just saying.
You sound slightly offensively as though you might be.
And if you've enjoyed the programme, don't forget there's the Woman's Hour podcast.
Yes,
now, sometimes when you have to do that announcement, you sound like you're sort of mentally disemboweling yourself. Mm. You sound like you just would rather do anything than talk about this bloody podcast.
No, I love the podcast. In fact, I was listening to it last week on holiday. So what happened was, I'll be really honest behind the scenes answer, completely honest. Joe's looking fascinated and I can't blame him. Our podcast wasn't doing very well. For whatever reason, this is about 18 months ago, and so we got some whiz kid in who said, okay, I think the problem with the podcast not doing very well is that you're never mentioning it, so people don't know they can get it, so why don't you just mention it every day? So we started mentioning it every day. Guess what? It is now the BBC's second most successful daily download podcast. And it's brilliant for us. So the podcast has really been successful, but you're right, we did get complaints. Peculiarly, and I understand the logic of this, we get complaints from people listening to the podcast who don't need to be reminded to get the podcast because they have got the podcast. So it's a bit complicated. So we were thinking of a way of removing the podcast announcement from the podcast, but that just takes time, you know. And, anyway, look, I take your point. Yeah. I try and say witty things like there's a summer sale on in the podcast department. It's now... It's now even freer than it was last week. I mean, or some other cobblers I've come up with.
Do you make a car fit advert? Podcast, podcast, podcast. We've got all the podcasts.
Ample car parking at the rear. Yes, that's how I started. I did do voiceovers for ads when I was in commercial radio.
Oh,
I'll say so myself. I think my voice is somewhat underused in advertising, but I can't do adverts, so that's probably why.
another behind the scenes question. How do you get to choose who gets the guest? Do you have to arm wrestle?
Now, yes. Now Jenny and I physically fight.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
And then they sell tickets.
Yeah.
We do it
for the
reception.
Angelina Jolie pit.
Well, no, I tell you what, seriously now, Hillary Clinton.
Ooh.
Well.
Who won?
Not me.
Oh, Jane.
I wasn't that bothered. I mean, just because she might become the first female president of the United States, who'd want to interview her anyway?
Oh.
And I said that to Jenny.
Yeah.
After she'd interviewed her.
If we ever get on the podcast, you can come and watch Jane, all right?
Thank you. Can I make the tea? Actually, what happened with that was it did look as though it was going to fall on my day, as we say. And then she changed her schedule.
Oh,
I mean,
Clinton.
I wouldn't mind. I'd read some of the bloody book.
She's got a lot to do. She's got that card business to keep going and everything. You know? She's a very busy woman.
I appreciate
woman.
She's busy, yeah.
Have you ever had an Oprah? Have you had a sniff of Oprah? That would be my dream.
Jenny's interviewed Oprah. Can you move on to something else, please?
Sorry.
And Jenny's interviewed Angelina Jolie. Have you got any other questions?
Kate McDonald. Trying to think of someone, you know, a Nolan. Have you done a Nolan?
Bananarama?
No.
Not even the one
Donlo.
Out of Shakespeare's sister. Have you interviewed
Siobhan?
James?
I love Siobhan.
Who have I interviewed? I've name dropped a few earlier on. There are some people you meet whose public reputation is feminist icon, really marvellous, battling, campaigning, wonderful. You meet them, and I'm not going to name any names here, but they come as they are really disappointing. They are actually quite rude, and I can tell a lot from the way they treat people, I mean, this is true right across the whole of human existence, the way so-called famous people treat people they don't believe are very important. And sometimes you see some very revealing things about people's complete lack of manners and consideration. And, of course, a lot of the time they don't know who I am because I'm not on telly, then my face is not known. So I can walk into the green room and I will be largely ignored by these, let's say, this random famous woman I may or may not be talking about, until she is told that I am the presenter. And then her whole attitude towards me will change, but her entire demeanour will change, because all of a sudden she's on, and so she's got to do the public thing. When she had just been celebrity pain in the arse until the moment she realised who I was. Now, I'm not naming names, but there are some people like that. I should say as well that, on the whole, politicians do not fall into that category.
Is that good?
I have met politicians across all parties, and again, I would say this in my apolitical BBC way, but genuine, hard-working people, often doing deeply unglamorous things for, frankly, often not a huge amount of reward, and often at great personal risk to their family lives and to their own mental and physical health. And they actually have my admiration.
Well, I was going to ask you, I mean, you do have some really harrowing episodes of Woman's Hour. How do you kind of debrief after that? Have you got a method? Have you got a way that you sort of...
I think it's fair to say the BBC keeps an eye on the, on the mental health of all its employees. Yeah. But, I mean, obviously those who appear in front of microphones. I think if I ask for help, it would be forthcoming.
Yeah.
I am really, fortunately for me, I mean, it's all relative. I am relatively resilient, and I think I'm quite good at compartmentalising stuff. And I do interview people who are very vulnerable, but actually the BBC does look after people. We don't interview people and then, if we think they can't do it and if they are going to feel worse afterwards than they did before. And actually, I always go and meet the guests before every programme, and I always say, if they're doing one of those difficult interviews, you know you don't have to do this. And if you want to walk out of the building now, you can do.
Yeah.
We'll fill the programme. Please don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And they're sort of relieved to hear that, but they usually don't. I mean, it's never happened that they've decided not to do it. But I always want people to know that this is just a radio programme, and it's not worth getting terribly upset about. It just isn't.
Yeah.
Having said that, it's the interviews with so-called real people that really make a connection with our audience. So although it's wonderful to have famous people on, and we often do, the response from the audience to, say, a really wow Hollywood guest is often pretty paltry compared to a woman who comes on to talk about caring for her elderly mum.
Yeah, but you know, we do love Angelina, of course.
I love all the celebs, but I'm only going on how little they really connect with the audience. That way, I'm talking about, I mean, Angelina isn't a good example. I think people loved hearing her,
I should say,
even if I didn't get to interview. I really regret not being able to interview Cilla Black. I've never interviewed her. I thought she was quite a pivotal figure, actually.
I know, because Ellie and I mean, we have... Most of our stand-up shows are great, and we really enjoy our podcasts, but I know...
Most of our stand-up shows are great. That's like sort of self-aggrandising and self-deprecating at the same
time.
So that's very Australian.
I know. But I know what we're like after the show is that we emotionally feel quite, well, high and low at the same time, and we'll just go, wide. It's like clambered to the bar.
It's hard, though. It's the hardest thing of all, and it's why I couldn't do it, is to stand up there in front of people you can see and say, I am going to make you laugh.
Yeah, but it's so addictive. It's one of the most addictive things I've ever done, the stand-up.
But I think you have to say, like you were saying, it doesn't matter. Like you were saying about it's just a radio show, it doesn't matter. You have to say it's just a stand-up show, it doesn't matter. And if it's awful, it'll feel awful for about 24 hours.
And you do get over it.
And then you'll be fine. And it's not like, I mean, I only started stand-up after I had a baby, because I'd always wanted to do it, but it was only when I had Charlie, I thought, well, if I can do that, like nothing can be worse than...
Good way of thinking.
Childbirth, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I won't have to be stitched up after I get my joke wrong.
I don't get, because I had elective caesareans. So I always feel like this is the part of the conversation I can't join in. Yeah. Although I was in a lot of pain when the anaesthetic thing wore off.
Oh,
yeah.
Nasty.
Nobody wants to hear that.
No.
I'm telling you anyway.
So the Woman's Hour Power List came out recently. Now, all the big names on there, Sturgeon, Jolie, Wintour, you know, who are your personal Women's Hour Power List women.
Who? Well, I was really glad that Nicola Sturgeon was number one in the list. I interviewed her in Glasgow in April, and it was probably my favourite interview of the year. And I don't think there's no reason for her to remember it, of course, but I just thought she was really engaging, and she's a great performer, whatever you think about her politics or the party she represents.
Yeah.
She's a brilliant speaker. She knows how to talk to people in a way that they can understand and they actually feel involved in what she's saying.
Mm.
And frankly, she is the best female communicator in British politics. I wish some of her magic, if you like, could translate elsewhere.
Excellent. All right. And your own influences? I mean, this year the power list was the influencers. Who have you been your big...
My mum is a clever woman who just didn't have the opportunities that I've had. I often think her mum, my grandmother, lived with us when I was a little girl, well, for much of my teens, actually, and she died shortly after I went to university. Again, a clever woman who, a bright woman, a woman who was interested and loved reading, and she had quite a lot to watch. She was quite a bit like me. She was quite lazy, I must be honest, my nan. Physically a tiny bit lazy, but her catchphrase was, never do anything until you're sure nobody else will do it for you.
And I love it.
Thanks, Nan.
That's going on a mug.
I'm going to embroider that later.
She may not have actually said it that way, but that's what she meant. And I didn't have a tough childhood. I've never had a day of poverty in my life. I wouldn't claim it. But what I am the first person in my family to go to university.
Mm.
And that is not insignificant.
No.
And I think my gran would have been, both my grandmothers would have been astonished at what I do for a living.
Yeah.
And the idea of somebody, I grew up in Liverpool, and the idea that somebody from my background could end up working for what my grandparents would know as the Home Service is something that's, they would never get their heads around.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I'm really talking about influence, it would be from that Liverpool, sort of Liverpool Irish background, which is very much where I come from. And I have, although I haven't lived in Liverpool since I left to go to university, and my mum and dad are still there, I should say, so I go there regularly. I've got a kind of scousometer. I can spot bullshit.
Yeah.
And you do get it occasionally. And yeah. I think that's why I do wrestle with celebrity at times. Mm. Because I just think, oh, God, you know, you're basically a self-obsessed knob. and I really don't... Yeah, and I think sometimes that needs to be brought to the surface. So I'm not...
It's an exposé.
I'm not easily impressed, it would be fair to say. And I do think...
Who's your knob list, then?
No, I could have a knob list.
We'll
without
do that. We'll do it later. The Woman's Hour knob list.
I listen to that.
Mummies.
Oh, yes.
Totally.
We're taking Jenny and Jane to the bar later for the knob list.
Yes. Have you ever had, like, a burning desire to go, oh, shut up, you knob?
Yes.
Really worried.
Should we move on?
Let's do a new section.
Yes.
I feel like I'm ready for a new section.
All right. Now, we're doing a food special.
Not a cesarean.
No. So you've talked about cooking, well, a lot on the Woman's Hour as well. But do you have a signature gist? And I think we've actually covered this.
Mince. We've done mince.
Mince. With agave gravy?
Well, I can't really... Yes, gravy's not a speciality of mine.
Yes.
I sometimes buy the stuff that comes...
In the little jelly pouch.
Well,
you're not on the BBC now, Jane Garvey. You can say what you like.
Gravox.
I daren't endorse a single product in case...
Canor Stockpot, that's what she's talking
maybe.
About.
Maybe. Who knows?
Who could other Canors...
Gravy melts.
Yeah. Marco Pierre White, if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for Jane Garvey's mince dishes. That's what they say, isn't it?
Can I just say at this point, that perhaps controversially, Jenny and I don't think either of us are big fans of cooking on the radio.
Yeah.
I actually don't really... this is my personal view. I'm not really sure I think we should be doing it. I think cooking is fine. I have to do it. Most people have to do it, whether you're male or female. I think all kids should learn to cook. I wish there was more domestic science in schools. I think it's appalling that kids don't learn to cook even the basic stuff before they leave school. Now it's atrocious. And they should.
Do you think there should be a mince GCSE?
I would almost certainly... get an A star.
Yes.
I hope. But I'm sort of semi-serious about that. I wish people... But I don't think we should be doing it. I don't really see why we should... Because also, I think cooking on the radio is a bit blah, isn't it?
I always end up visualising it, and I see, like, Allegro Macavedi or somewhere with a little camping stove, and you're there going, and I see you're frying the onions.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, funnily enough, and I'm sure Jenny would say the same, it's not easy to do that.
No.
It's actually much easier to chat to someone, keeping that cooking stuff going. And I once had a really bizarre encounter with a male chef a couple of years ago, and he was making a meringue. Well, he put the bloody whisk on, and then he couldn't hear my questions, and it was just farcical. So what are you doing now? And it's a bit of a sort of private classic, I think, for some people. They said, oh, God, I know.
We are going to do a cooking special. Well, it's not so much cooking.
You have publicly said that you do like a Greg's donut, and I bought three, just all for you, actually, Jane Garvey, which is a treat, because it's also our two-year anniversary, the Scummy Mummy, so we're celebrating with a...
So in 67 years, you'll be as old as Woman's Hour. Well,
67
done.
Years? Yeah. Wow.
Well, we're 69 at the moment.
Oh, wow. That's
so
it.
To celebrate our two-year anniversary, we'd like you to eat all three of these donuts in 2 minutes. Go! Oh, well, while reading the shipping forecast.
Now, I've bought a selection of Greg's treats for you.
Your writing is very,
very
poor.
So the bits of food are numbered on the...
Yes, yeah. Okay.
And I have to tell you what they are.
Yes, okay. So number one, Jane Garvey, is...
Roll. It's a sausage roll.
Correct.
Right.
You do number two.
Mm. That's a steak bake, mate.
Is it? Yes, good.
It's a steak bake.
Now, number three was a personal request of Ellie Gibson.
Oh, now this is sort of a test of your Greg's knowledge, Dane, because this is a new offering by Greg's. I think you'll agree it's absolutely delicious, but what is it?
You know, what is in Jane Garvey's mouth? It's a new Now Show quiz.
This is the kind of semi-orgasmic noise that I'm obliged to make. Oh, that's absolutely lovely. I really fancy this blue cheese tagliatelle at 20:10 in the morning.
I do.
All right. I'm afraid I can't. I can't place it. It is beef, isn't it?
It's.
What do you mean,
beef?
Well?
It's Greg's beef, isn't it?
So. Now, listen, I did not say that. Is that a steak supreme?
No, that is the new... Correct me if I'm wrong, Helen. That is the new beef and Stilton roll. Number four. Number four is unpleasant.
Is it?
I'm not... Is that... It's not a cheese thing, because I can't taste the...
No. It is a chicken bake.
I was going to say.
Now, I think I'm on firmer ground here, because this is...
What do you reckon? She's doing a sniff. What do you reckon?
Oh, that's revolting.
Chorizo?
It's a pulled pork bake.
That is unacceptable. I feel like Greg's have let themselves down.
This obsession with pulled pork has got to stop.
It's got to stop. And
stop pulling your pork. Just leave it alone.
Woman's Hour doesn't endorse pulling pork. It never has and it never will. Although we do... Anyway, let's not go there. No.
Now, of those
That was
five,
really horrible. Thank you for making me do that.
You are very welcome.
Of those five, Jane, of those five, what was your favourite?
Well, I think the sausage roll. I mean, you can't go wrong with a Greg's sausage roll. Well, I felt perhaps you could go wrong with some of the other things that you offered me there.
Well, Jane, on top of this generous gift of Greg's, the Scummy Mummies have also put together a gift for you. Knowing that you love Greg's...
She looks genuinely worried,
I know, she does.
Quite upset.
Knowing that you love...
It's not an inflatable man or something.
Greg's sausage rolls, and that you had a knitting special... I've knitted you a Greg's sausage roll holder.
Look at this. This is like Woman's Hour encapsulated in one gift. It's handcrafted.
That is absolutely lovely. I'm going to line the walls of my yurt with this. but you need to give me a few more.
Okay, I will.
I mean, it would also do... What else?
It
could warm a whole range of things. It's the length of... actually, it's not the length of anything I've ever seen, but... It's lovely, and the choice of colours as well. Acid yellow and bright orange.
Yes, the Scummy Mummies.
And there was a sort of general intestine look about it as well.
It's quite colonic.
It's certainly been ribbed.
Yeah.
It is colonic.
What a delightful thing this has been to meet you.
We'll put that on social media. Ellie has written a special shipping forecast for you.
Basically, Jane Garvey,
My can't you say I can see your nipples at the moment?
Oh,
it's a slightly unsettling experience. I'm a woman of the world. this didn't happen when I interviewed Meryl Streep.
I thought this was how you recorded Woman's Hour. I thought that was the thing. I thought you all sat there with their boobs out.
Perhaps we should.
Just for the listener, I am breastfeeding. I haven't just decided to expose myself.
She's trying
myself.
To seduce her with Greg's and nipples.
Yeah. I'm not stupid enough to expose myself in the BBC these days. You can't get away with it. So my secret dream, Jane Garvey, apart from getting on the Archers, is to read out the shipping forecast on Radio 4.
Are you any good?
Well, let's find out. Okay. I'm going to audition for you now.
Yeah, I'm right there.
This is BBC Radio Scum. And now, the shitting forecast.
No, that's wrong for a start.
The general synopsis at midday. Tantrums variable, becoming whinging later. Viking, north at Cira, south at Cira, K Cira Cira. Rows at times, occasionally severe, with lingering resentment expected. Rockall, Malin, German bite. It's not my fault, he bit me first. Tyne, Dogger, Fisher Price. Dishwasher still not emptied. Husband's excuses poor, becoming infuriating later. Fair Isle, southeast Iceland, north Waitrose. Rage at times with outbreaks of shouting. Patience decreasing, becoming non-existent. Lundy, Fastnet, Irish Sea, Shannon. Shannon, if I have to tell you again, you're going on the naughty step until you're 25. Trafalgar, Fitzroy, Seoul, destroying. Right, that's it. I want a divorce. And now it's time for The Archers. Rob struggles to adjust to family life as Helen finds another poo in the milking machine.
Yay! Very good. Jane Garvey.
Actually, you are worryingly competent.
Oh, nobody's ever said that to me before.
No, and I think...
It's going on our poster, Ellie.
I think you've got a future.
Do you?
And I speak with all the experience of someone who's never read The Shipping Forecast, but you made it sound it was pure poetry.
Oh.
It was excellent.
Thank you.
And I do think if you're interested in pursuing a career in broadcasting...
Yeah.
Don't contact the BBC, but there are other businesses. We'd love to hear from you.
Loose women.
Well, I mean, loose bra strap certainly appears to be your...
So much nipple.
Oh, but we have nearly finished. It is just time for the Scummy Mummy Confessions. Do you want to go first, Helen?
I wanted to confess that the other day I was buying shoes for my child in Dulwich.
Oh.
The Dulwich shoe shop.
That's not a confession. That's just showing off.
And I looked down at my kid's fringe and a big knit.
Oh!
It's like crawling out. And I had to extract a live knit and pretending I was just sort of like playing with their hair.
Oh!
And I was like, there's knits in Dulwich. I've sullied Dulwich. Oh. It's Dulwich now.
My Scummy Mummy confession, it's quite a recent one actually. Recently I went to Broadcasting House to record a podcast with Jane Garvey, and it was about 10 minutes before I realised my tits were just hanging out in the middle of the recording studio. So...
You can kill yourself later.
Yeah, and
it's a measure of what a polite person I am that I didn't actually draw attention to it for quite a while.
Well, apart from when you told me about it, yeah.
But it's been 10 minutes into the...
I thought you were just enjoying the spectacle. I thought, you know, she's very relaxed, isn't she? I thought Woman's Hour would be quite formal, but, you know. Jane Garvey, do you have a Scummy Mummy confession for us?
Well, I mean, it's a bit boring to go back to the knit theme, but... I have presented Woman's Hour with knits.
Oh!
I think is it should be a badge of honour, really.
Oh, there are not enough badges.
It's just the thing is, I'm not sure whether Jenny uses the same headphones.
I was going to say, did you think you went to Jenny?
I don't think she does, because without giving too much away, we are both divas, and I have my headphones and she has her headphones.
Oh.
And they live together in the same studio, but I don't think the headphones speak to each other.
Oh. You don't share a studio with Today, do you? I'd love it if John Humphreys got knits off you. That would be good, wouldn't it? So, Prime Minister. Scritch, scratch.
It would be quite important. I mean, there are a lot of egos at Radio 4. And the idea that Woman's Hour would share a studio with a Today programme, you must be joking.
Is that just anathema?
No.
Just not going to happen. Do I make myself clear?
Yes. I think we've fully gone behind the curtain
here
at Radio 4.
Can I just say?
Have another donut, Jane.
Well,
please,
I'm going to take them downstairs to the old facts. I work to my colleagues. Well, I've really enjoyed it. I've been on holiday and I've had a massive carbo load, and my idea was to come back to London and I was going to have one of those quinoa salads for my lunch today, instead of which I've had a selection pack of Greg's pasties and a flaming donut. So thank you very, very much.
You are welcome, Jane Garvey.
Great.
You're so beach ready by the time next year rolls round. Oh, well, I'm very sad to say we've come to the end of the podcast, haven't we, Helen?
We have. Now, if you've enjoyed the podcast, do tell your friends about our podcast.
Are you getting at me? Can I just say, Woman's Hour is live 5 mornings a week on Radio 4 at 10 in the morning and Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock. And don't forget the podcast.
I think they get a few more podcast downloads than us, Ellie.
Woman's Hour?
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Just a couple.
Good for them. Yeah. Yes, we are on the Facebook. We're on Twitter at Scummy Mummies. And if you'd like to see us live and in the flesh, how much flesh? I mean, who knows? After today, anything can happen. We are doing a show on the 19th of September at the Amersham Arms in New Cross. Tickets are available from scummymummies.com.
That's it. You can come for free if you like, Jane.
Oh, God, you are kind.
Thank you so much, Jane Garvey, for being a fantastic guest and for hosting us here at Broadcasting House.
Great
it's been
pleasure.
Brilliant.
Well, listen, not everybody brings in what you have.
And not everybody brings up what you will later on
Indeed.
This afternoon.
I cannot thank you enough. So best not to thank you at all.
Thank you very much for listening. Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. The C word is another thing that... Wait, I'm not going to say it, but although there's no reason why I couldn't, because the C word is one of those words that Women's Hour has done items on, which we talk about reclaiming it.
Yeah.
And I think there's... again, that sounds a bit Guardian reader, but I think these are all really interesting areas. Mm. Why is that word the so-called rudest word of all?
That's what I've said for many years.
That's misogyny.
I'm trying to bring it down.
Yeah, well, you're right not to say it here, though, Jane, because people download it and turn it into a ringtone. Jane Garvey saying
Which is why I'm not going to say it.
That's our million-dollar idea. Thought we were going to trick her into it, Helen. You've ruined it. You've ruined it. Now we'll never get on Dragon's Den.
You're right. You won't. I'm going to make a phone call as soon as this
Well, Deborah, our idea... We've got a patent in 12 countries. We're looking for £150,000 for 90% of our company. See, we've written the pitch, Jane. We've
it's
written
done.
It.
We've
I'm
it
really
it's
worried. Done.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.